Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
All right, we're back. What's up, everybody? Welcome to the Time and Room Podcast, the hottest lacrosse podcast in all the land, Dane. All about lacrosse, featuring my buddy Coach Dane Smith from St. Andrew's Episcopal in Potomac, Maryland. My name is Eric Bickle. I'm one of the sports junkies on 106.7 The Fan in D.C. and NBC Sports Washington. Dane, of course, played at Robert Morris, a two-time captain there. He's coached at D1 and D3 level, and he's now the head coach at St. Andrew's in Potomac. Coach, how are you doing, buddy?
I'm doing good, man. I'm doing good. Coming off a heater, right? Having Mr. Rabel on, and now we're back. We went from established podcast and now the hottest podcast in the
in all the land.
I don't even know if we're
you got to say it. You just say it and then you make it happen. That's all.
Yeah,
nobody cares. You just say you're the best and eventually they start to believe you. And you're right. Yes. We have a special guest. We had a great one last week in Paul Rabel. We're just killing it in the guest category. Dane lined up, a four-time All-American, a guy who has a chance to be a five-time All-American at Ohio State, with the rule allowing spring sports kids another year of eligibility. He's a short stick D-middy, and one of former Time and Room guest Brett Manny's favorite players, Ryan Tarafenko from Ohio State.
Gonna be a great conversation. I've heard about this kid like stories for a couple years, whether it's from Brett Manny or even my assistant coach Petrosky, Sam Petrosky, that actually might have coached him for a year up at NXT, and every article you read is the coach's dream. You know what I mean?
He's
a D-middy, but he's way more than that, and just an absolute beast. So
I know I was looking at his stats, and I was like, well, Dane was a D-middy.
Look a little bit different than my stats.
did Dane have 34 points, 15 goals, and 19 assists too?
Yeah. Did Dane start as a freshman and play in the NCAA tournament? No. So it's funny. I definitely have an affinity for a defensive midfield position, because I think it totally takes a different type of person. But that position has even evolved. You know, it used to be the horn situation. You go on and off, and the two-way midi has become so important in our game. And not to say I would have scored a bunch of goals, but I just think it's a different mindset now. You know, that those guys are trying to push the cage with the shot clock, and he certainly got the skill set to do it. I mean, I know he didn't enter the PLL draft, but he's the type of player that would thrive in the professional league, right? He's, you know, big, strong, fast, and can score in transition and does it all. I mean, I've never read a negative word about the kid. So, you know, I'm sure it'll be a great conversation. I'm excited to learn a few things. I hope some young kids listen, because, you know, he's a workhorse, and he didn't get to where he is by just, you know, laying on the couch playing Xbox. So no. I'm excited to kind of hear about his work ethic and all that stuff.
Yeah, and you mentioned, you know, the PLL. I mean, he said he wants to play professional lacrosse. Unlike Pat Spencer, he actually wants to play lacrosse professionally when he's all said and done.
Yeah, so. I know. What a nerd, right? Going to play pro basketball instead. So, yeah.
You know what? Here's the thing. I think Pat Spencer's going to be really successful playing ball. I really do. I think he's going to surprise some people.
I don't know basketball like you know basketball. I go to St. Andrew's basketball games, and we got a good team. We watch those kids play. But, I think for him to be a Big Ten starting basketball player after not playing for
four years
or whatever it was. I know he's playing in the summer, but I do get it. You know, not that it's the same thing, but when you grow up playing one sport your whole life, and then you all of a sudden kind of go back and find a new sport. That's how I was with lacrosse. I played soccer my whole life. Kind of came into lacrosse late. I'm like, man, this thing is exciting. It's different. And there was no burnout, right? And maybe he's a little bit burnout from lacrosse. He's done it his whole life. He played at Boys Lat, and he's, you know, done almost everything he can except for, you know, playing in the pros and, you know, Team USA and that stuff. So, yeah, and I'm sure he could probably pick up the stick and come back whenever he wants, you know? So,
yeah, it's a great fallback. And look, the fact of the matter is, as successful as the PLL's been still to date, unless you are just a world-class superstar, you know, he can make great money playing overseas. You know, yeah, he didn't totally even have to play in the NBA.
I didn't read. Is he trying to play in the NBA or is he just?
Oh, I think he wants. I think eventually. I think that's the goal. You know, a couple of years, maybe play in the G League. The thing is, he's got an NBA body. Mm-hmm. You know, and he's obviously an elite athlete. So let's see. It'll be interesting to see where that guy ends up. But you know, he wants to play basketball. Tarasenko. He wants to play lacrosse. He's coming back for his fifth year, so that's super exciting. Can't wait to talk to him. This has been, though, a weird week. Let's just jump into the Furman news because that was something, Dane, that just – it was like a gut punch. It's something that we talked about a few weeks ago. Everybody's kind of whispered about it, and we've seen it like at the University of Cincinnati, right, at Akron where they're starting to drop sports, and we always mm-hmm. knew that lacrosse – would be in the crosshairs for some of these things, and the first D1 school drops, and it's just awful.
Yeah, I mean, it's terrible. You feel so bad for those players, the coaches. I mean, you know, how many people invested in that program, and a fairly new program, too. So I wonder if that went in the decision process, right? Is that they tried it, and maybe it was, you know, not as successful or as easy as they thought it would be to be successful in South Carolina, which, you know, it's not a hotbed for lacrosse, and so I think it's probably easy for them to look at lacrosse and pull the trigger quickly on that since it's new, you know, maybe mm-hmm. rather than a sport that's been there for 20, 30 years. So it sucks. I mean, there's no other way to say it. I know Stevie's at, you know, a smaller school. You worry about these smaller schools that don't have this huge revenue, whether it's with football or basketball, and I worry about my alma mater. I mean, not that there's no reason to be worried right now, but it's hard not to be when you see something like this. You just wonder if something else is going to, you know, another cookie's going to crumble here. So,
yeah, I mean, when you talk to people terrible. About it, all they say is this is not going to be the last one. You know, they don't think it's necessarily going to be a bloodbath for lacrosse, but this is likely to not be the last one. So, yeah, you feel terrible for the kids, terrible for the coaches.
And it comes at a time, too, where, like, everyone for the past couple of years has been talking about the growth of the game, talking about expanding the Division I programs, getting Utah in the mix. Merrimack becomes a Division I program. You right. have a lot of momentum behind Division I lacrosse, and there's always rumors about SEC and Pac-12 schools. And
I think it is coming.
I think it's gone pause. There's no way. I mean, not with, you know, these schools aren't going to expand their athletic programs, expand their spending right now.
Not going to happen right now, but once we get back on our feet, and I think, you know, you and I were talking about it before we started recording, that like Notre Dame, I think, has got a brilliant plan. I think some other schools are going to fall in line, do the same thing, where they're going to go back a little early, maybe come back a little early, try to miss a little of this whole potential, you know, flu COVID wave in maybe, you know, late November, December. I think it's a great idea, and I think it's a great sign.
Yeah, and it helps these schools, too, that especially football – that means football is back, hopefully, and that means revenue is coming into the school, and that means hopefully we can protect some of these other sports. I mean, baseball got cut by, you know, Furman.
Yeah, don't forget the baseball guys.
You know, you can't forget them, and it's, you know, those athletes. I know I read just before we jumped on here, 30, you know, players into the portal from Furman, and what a year to enter the portal, you know what I mean? You have all these kids coming back already, and so, like, those kids are going to struggle at times, depending, to find homes. I'm sure they're not going to end up, you know, playing Division One, I would imagine that would be tough to find a home for all 30 kids. But also, too, you know, lacrosse is 12.6 scholarships. A lot of those kids are paying a lot of money.
Oh yeah,
you know, to go to these schools. And so, I don't know if, you know, again, you and I talked about it and joked about it a little bit, but like, there's a lot of full scholarship sports programs that, you know, maybe football, these, some of these other schools are not, you know, revenue builders or and they're not their main sports, but I think the idea of cutting football, no one would ever think of that. They just automatically think of those secondary sports, if you will. And so that's why lacrosse is in the crosshairs. And, you know, I pray that Furman is the last. But like you said, we really don't know. I mean, I don't know. Coach Athens, Andrew Athens, is, you know, a guy that played Rob Morris a little bit for me and then transferred with me and then transferred out. And he's been assistant there for a long time. He's got two kids. He loves the area. He's associate head coach down there. Richie Mead is a lacrosse legend, and now he's without a home. And so – and at a time when there's just not that many jobs open, too. So what the heck do those guys do?
Yeah, well, you know, Richie's so established, he'll find something, and I'm sure your buddy will, too. But it's going to take some time. I just feel awful about the whole thing. You know, as a buddy of mine who's in the broadcasting world explained to me, and he does a lot of college broadcasting, he said, Eric, look, at the end of the day, a lot of these sports, it depends on the funding and the private funding and the donors. Mm-hmm. And so if your school, you know, like Utah, I mean, that's all privately funded, I believe. Pretty sure the entire program is funded by the one guy, right? Or he at least initially kicked it all off. So, you know, hopefully, you know, this is a big time for those donors to step up because lacrosse needs it right now.
And I would, and I was hoping, you know, potentially like, could you reinstate the program? Can you put it on hold for a year? But even, you know, I read something before it came on. There's no,
they said they had no plans for it.
Yeah, Furman put it on their own Instagram, the Furman lacrosse Instagram. It said basically there's no plans for reinstatement. You know what I mean?
And this like, don't even grasp.
So, I mean, and then there's obviously the trickle down effect. It affects, you know, that was Bellarmine's conference, right? That's the SoCon. And I don't know what that does to the numbers in that conference. And does a team, you know, try to jump in that? That's an independent school like a Cleveland State or something, you know, who knows?
It's weird because you'd think Bellarmine would be a school that might be, you know, sort of in the mix there, but they just went D1 and everything else. They can't take their signature sport out.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's crazy.
Yeah. I mean, I think we'd be wrong to like guess about who it would be. And I also wonder too, you never know what these schools had in motion before this, right? I mean, I mentioned it, I think, a couple times before when I was an assistant coach at Robert Morris. We had 23 Division I sports, and I always felt that was too many for a smaller school. And we went to 17, and I was part of not the decision process. I was a coach, and so I sat in on some meetings with our athletic director and things like that, and just hearing about when the decisions were being made in that process. And obviously, it was devastating for all those sports that were ended up being cut. But so you just never know what the school's situation or financial standings were before going into it. So. Brutal, especially when we're trying to, you know, all be positive during this time. And so hope those kids find a home and we'll see. We'll see where it goes.
I keep getting more and more positive every week with some of the data that's coming in. And I'm just, you know, I'm still trending in that direction. So this was a gut punch, but hopefully some of the chatter's wrong and then we kind of cut it off here. I'm afraid it probably won't be. There'll probably be a few more that fall, but let's hope and pray that it's not. We did have an interesting story real quick before we bring on our guest. Jared Bernhardt is going to play football, right?
Yeah.
How cool
is
that?
What is it with these lacrosse guys? They're just like stud athletes.
Yeah.
Just like picking and choosing what sports they want to play in college. So.
It's interesting because he's going to play, what is it, at Ferrum State? Is that what it is? Or Fair State? Whatever it's
Fair
called.
Fair State, yeah.
Fair State, forgive me. And D2 football, I'm sure he had options where he could play a variety of different places, but it's probably one where he could play right away.
Yeah, and I think a scheme, I mean, not to get into the details, weeds of it, but he's a triple option quarterback. And and he was, committed to Navy at one point for football as well. So
it's like a great fit.
Yeah, exactly.
And you know, get to play right away. And it's interesting, I wonder his thought process, because, you know, he could come back to Maryland and get another, you know, chance at another national championship. You know, or play football, live out that dream. I mean, I guess it's his only chance to do it. It's now or never to do it. So I understand it. But that couldn't have been easy.
Yeah. And obviously we had Coach Tillman on here. I wonder how much he knew at that point. I'm sure he probably.
I'm sure he had an inkling.
Yeah. I'm sure he had an idea of what was going to happen. It's hard. I mean, you never want to guess. And I don't know the kid at all. But obviously his father passed away. I don't know if it was last year or. And I know he was pretty involved in the sport, so you don't know if that played a.
His dad worked for the Patriots, I think, right? Did some work with the Patriots, I think.
Yeah, I think what I read was it was with the Patriots, and I think most recently with Bill O'Brien. So probably maybe when he was at the Patriots and then with the Texans, but
right.
You know, I if you don't quote me on that, I think I'm more just guessing there a little bit, but I know, you know, family is obviously full of athletes. And I would have guessed that, you know, I don't know if the NFL is in his dreams, but I think it's more so change of pace. And it's not easy, you know, playing, you know, at Maryland for 4 years and being held to that standard. So maybe a change of pace is something that he needs. So wish him the best of luck, but miss seeing him play. That's for sure. You know, going to those games. And but they've already brought in a couple transfers, so I think they'll be all right.
They'll always be all right.
Yeah, they'll be all right
at this point.
So we'll see. We'll see. But all right. It'll be loaded next year. So let's get this guy on. Let's bring him in.
Yeah, let's bring him in. So we'll go to a quick break here. It'll be like a millisecond for you, but we'll zoom him in and we'll be right back with potential 5-time All-American from Ohio State, Ryan Tarafinko. Don't go anywhere. All right, we're back. It's my pleasure to introduce our guest today, a guy who does it all, but he's really made a name for himself, doing the dirty work as a short stick D-mini for Ohio State. 4-time All-American, has a chance to be a 5-time All-American now, 2-time captain, I assume he's going to be a 3-time captain. He's played in 52 games. Ohio State's active leader in ground balls is 139. 34 career points, Dane. 15 goals, 19 assists. Two-time Tourton Award nominee. First team all Big Ten at least twice. Just an absolute overall stud from Sinking Spring in Pennsylvania, Ryan Tarasenko. Ryan, how you doing, buddy?
I'm good. I'm good. Thanks for having me on today.
Yeah, no, thanks for coming on, man. It's a real pleasure to have you on. And Coach Dane over there has been talking you up the last few weeks, and he's like, we got to get this kid. This kid's an absolute monster.
Obviously, we had Brett Manny on a couple weeks ago, and he's obviously said great things. And yeah. My assistant, Coach Ostrowski, worked for NXT for a year and sings your praises. And as a fellow, we were joking before you came on. I played D-Midi at Robert Morris, and I said my stats didn't look like yours. So so I have an affinity for what it means to play that position, but you've obviously done it at a much higher level than I ever did. But watched you over the past few years play like an absolute beast and do all the little things, which is I'm sure I know Coach Myers says that's such an important thing. So appreciate you coming on and excited to kind of hear about everything. Obviously not the way you wanted to end your season, but I'm excited to hear you coming back for a fifth year.
Let's talk about that a little bit. First let's just start sort of at the end of the year. Did you personally see this coming? I think my son was pretty shocked. Maybe in the last week, my son plays at Marist. He's a freshman there. Maybe in the last week or so, the guys started whispering, wow, this doesn't look good. But I don't think they thought that this was going to be it. You know what I mean? And we'd still be in this spot right now. What were those last few weeks like for you? Did you see this coming? How did Coach handle it? How did you and the seniors handle it?
Yeah, that's a good question. It's funny. I'm kind of laughing just looking back because, like, what has happened over the last 2 months is kind of crazy. And we were definitely on the naive side as a senior class, like, just kind of like trying to stay positive, and thinking that the season's, hopefully that the season's going to finish out and we're going to get a chance to finish. But it wasn't until I think the NBA kind of halted their season that we're like, oh, man, I can't really see a scenario where college lacrosse is going on and the NBA is not. So we were really fortunate, though. We got to play Notre Dame and we got to kind of experience that big win. The freshmen got to experience it. And that's kind of going to be the last memory that this 2020 group's going to hold. So I'm really glad that we got to kind of have that moment together.
And that had to be kind of like one of the last games of, because that was a midweek game, right? That was a Tuesday game. Everyone that's come on here is saying, the NBA, when everyone knew the NBA was canceled, they knew it was over. I was still holding out hope. I just thought, obviously I'm a local high school coach. We thought maybe high schools could hang on, and then you guys were set to play Denver that fall, that weekend.
Yeah. I think we might've honestly been the last game. Yeah. Now you say that that was a Wednesday game and we had Denver on Sunday. So it was a midweek game.
Yeah. I still remember just Cuban's reaction, right? Because that was the thing that kind of went viral. I don't know if you saw that, like on SportsCenter, like Cuban was just kind of sitting there and they showed him the text and he was like floored. Oh my God, they've canceled the NBA season or at least suspended it. And like you say, I think that's when everybody else just sort of fell in line and it got crazy. When did you know? So there were whispers right away that, you know what? Because you guys maybe got a third of the season in the spring sports, we're going to have an opportunity. The NCAA might look kindly upon giving guys another chance and women to come back. Did you know instinctively right away, well, I'm coming back, I'm going to finish what we started here? Or was there some thought there? Because I'm sure you had post, graduation plans lined up.
Yeah, I think for me I knew right away that I would come back if we were able to, but everyone was saying we were going to be able to, but there was not really like hardcore evidence that was actually going to happen. So I remember it being like probably a week or two gray area where Coach Myers and I are talking on the phone, daily and just giving me updates. And, I remember as soon as the news broke, for Ohio State that they were going to allow seniors to come back and financially it was going to make sense for me to come back. Coach Myers got on the phone, immediately called me in. And then it was kind of full steam ahead, getting Trey and Jeff to come back. And now we got a, pretty good, squad coming back. But obviously we're missing, seven seniors that, were really, put their staple in this program. So that's obviously, one of the negatives of all this.
So you had seven seniors return to choose not to come back and then three that came back. So total, you guys had 10.
Ten seniors. Yep. Total seven. Just didn't make as much sense to come back. And three, it kind of made more sense to come back for sure.
Right. Well, thank God you got something to look forward to and end things on, hopefully, you know, on a note that you're, you know, on your terms. But let's talk about sort of your journey a little bit, you know, growing up in Pennsylvania. You played with NXT. Did you guys, we asked Brett, is it NXT or Next? What did you guys call it?
We called it Next, but I know a lot of people do call it NXT. And
right.
I remember it's funny because like when you break down like your team name, right? Like like one of the first time they're like, all right, NXT on three. And it just sounded terrible. We're just like, oh man, like it's not NXT anymore. It's just Next. So,
yeah, that works. So you were, as Dane was telling me, you were a three sports star in high school, right? So, and one of them was water polo.
I wouldn't call me a star in water polo. I was a backup goalie. But it was fun. I mean, all my friends, I mean, water polo where I'm from is a really popular sport. So
right.
you play it as soon as you can, you know, kind of start swimming and stuff like that. I started as early as second grade, and it's just something I really liked doing. I wasn't the best at it, but it was a fun time.
Well, it also keeps you in ridiculous shape, right? The conditioning for that, I've just got to imagine, is absurd.
Yeah, I played goalie, so I was doing a lot of treading and all that stuff. So that definitely keeps you in a good shape.
Yeah, Eric, you'd probably drown if you tried to do that.
I mean, I could do it for like 5 minutes, but let's not get crazy.
Yeah. And what about your high school experience? Just like take us back a little bit. You know, obviously growing up in basically central PA, right? You can call it Philly or wherever, just outside. You know, when did you kind of fall in love with the sport? And then, you know, walk us through kind of what it was like to start that recruiting process. When Brett was on here, he said he made you cry. So I want to get to, you made him cry when you wrote him a note. So I want to get to that at some point, but obviously driving, you know, making a big commitment to play for NXT. And so just kind of take us through the early years and how you kind of ended up at Ohio State, you know.
Yeah, for sure. I think I knew at a pretty early age, I'd say seventh or eighth grade, that lacrosse was my favorite sport. I definitely wasn't my best sport, right? Like I was a lot better at actually soccer. And, you know, if you would have told me, you know, looking back, what sport I had the best chance to go play college athletics in, I probably would have said soccer. But that's why when ninth grade came, I made a decision to stop playing soccer. And I played water polo just because it was a little bit less of a commitment. I told my coach, hey, listen, I want to play. I want to be on your team. I'm not going to – I have to go to these fall tournaments, though. Is that okay? If not, I understand. And I'm really grateful. He was like, yeah, I understand. Like, we want you on the team, but – you know, lacrosse is your first and foremost goal. So that was that. And my freshman's junior, sophomore year were tough. I wasn't a kid who was really getting recruited. And back in my landscape, it was a lot different, right? You know, the best of the best were committing fall of their freshman year, which for me, it was like, holy crap. Like, this is kind of nerve-wracking. Yeah, it was nuts. And, you know, I'm really glad that they kind of moved that rule to make it a little bit more realistic for everyone. But, you know, with Coach Manny, I was just really grateful to be surrounded by all those people who were giving me feedback. Like, I was craving feedback because I just never been coached like that before. And that's why me and my mom and my dad, right, we made that commitment to drive down to Philly, right, because I'm about an hour and 10 minutes away from where we practiced. And it was just for the feedback and the coaching. And that's what really kind of skyrocketed me to where I am now, where, like, they gave me certain things that I had to get better at, certain things that I had to do each week. And I committed myself to doing that, and, you know, the results followed, which was really cool to see.
How long was NXT around before you – were you part of their first class? Like, how long was it around? How'd you know about it?
Yeah, so I played trash can. So, like, that's way, way back.
It's like three-on-three lacrosse. We do that at all my summer camps. It's the best.
Yeah, it's a fun game, but there was actually a club called Trash Can Lacrosse back in seventh grade, which turned into NXT. And the next 2014s were the first class. And I just remember my mom would drive up and she would obviously stay and watch because it was such a far drive. And we would see this high school team playing like behind us on a different field. And every single time after practice, my mom would be like, do you watch those people? Like, do you see like what they're doing and like how they're moving the ball and like all the skills they have? And it's ever since then, that next 2014 team kind of like got my attention that like, okay, this is something I'm really into where I want to go and practice 2 days a week with older kids and get challenged like that and really practice and get coached at elite level for 2 days a week for the next 2 years. And that's when I kind of started looking into Next and all that.
Gotcha.
What about the overall like recruiting process for you? Obviously you're at Ohio State now, and I don't know how much you want to get into it, but I'm sure there were other schools after you. And what was that like to kind of go through that process? And you know, what kind of schools were you considering, and what did you and your family kind of walk through as you guys went through that process?
When did they start showing interest in you?
My end of sophomore summer is when I started kind of really putting a lot of it together. And that was probably when the first school that was really interested in me started reaching out. You know, my parents were really great in the process because they were all in on whatever I needed to get to the next level. And they didn't pressure me in anything. They let me go to schools. My dad, actually, I remember every school I visited, I'd be like, oh, I want to go there. My dad was like, take a second, step back, like, don't rush it. And that was great advice, right? Because Ohio State was probably the last school to call me. And I was coming home from a workout, and I remember coach calling me, and I thought it was like a joke almost. I was like, Ohio State, like, what do you mean? And he's like, you know, can you come out here this weekend? And I looked at my mom. I hung up. I was like, yes. I hung up. I was like, all right, we're going to Ohio State this weekend. And like always, you know, she dropped everything for me, and we drove out to Columbus, and kind of the rest is history on that.
What's that visit like? Can you go there and you see that weight room and you see all that history and, right, the stadium and everything else?
It's legit. It's really hard not to be the best version of yourself there. They just have so much resources, whether it be what you said, the weight room, the training room, the fuel zone, or just to be people, right? Like staff, academic support, all that. So it's really hard not to be the best version of yourself there, which was great. But I remember going on a visit, and I was the oldest kid there by probably a year. You know, it was a group visit. One of my fellow teammates, he's going to be a junior now, was actually on the same visit. And I was with a bunch of freshmen, and it was funny. It was probably like 10 or 15 guys. And, you know, everyone was just trying to talk to coach as much as they can and get their name in. And I'm, you know, a little bit bigger and older than all of them, but it was funny looking back on
were
it.
You kids are probably like scared.
You know? Right. Were you trying?
Probably what they were thinking.
Yeah. Were you doing like a bunch of like prospect camps and all that too, or just tournaments and that sort of thing? Is that where you were mostly getting noticed?
Our next team was just so great for me because it was such an unselfish team where like coaches really loved watching us because we played like a normal high school team and we moved the ball around and it wasn't, I'm not a kid who really shines at showcases. I'm not like super offensively gifted with the shooting and all that stuff. So I felt like, you know, playing with Next is where I really got to show like I can be a team player. Like I can go set picks. I can go pick up ground balls. You know, I'll go clear the ball if that's what needs to be done. And I'm really happy that like our team had that kind of chemistry together where that was kind of an environment that we were playing in every tournament.
But on your high school team, you were a goal scorer, right?
My high school team, yeah, that was a little different. I had to score some goals for them for sure. I played both ways, same as, you know.
Probably never came off the field. If you played for me, and there's no way you came off the field.
Yeah, I took face-offs for a while. I just did what they needed to be done. And my high school senior year, we actually won our first ever District 3 championship. And that's just something for me that, you know, bringing that back to Wilson, first one ever, first for our county, and bringing it back to that team specifically was just something that was really, really cool and special, something I hold on to.
Talk about that transition a little bit, because obviously, I said earlier, I have an affinity for the defensive midfield position, but obviously, you know, most people that understand lacrosse, you know, you don't go into college necessarily saying like, you know, I can't wait to be a D-middy. You know, most guys that are D-middies in college are stars on their high school teams, much like yourself. So, but I'm sure, you know, Coach Myers is probably honest during the recruiting process and maybe where you fit in early, but what was that transition like? And obviously you hit the ground running, you know, played right away as a freshman, but I'm sure there was an adjustment period. So what was that transition, you know, from high school across?
There's some honesty given, right? It was, you know, where can I give the most value? Where can I be the biggest asset to the team? And, you know, he was straight up. He was like, listen, like, do you want to be like a third, second line midfielder, you know, your sophomore year? Like, do you want to have an opportunity to play for us right away and give, you know, some value to this team and, you know, immediately. And, you know, the choice was pretty simple. And Coach Myers does a really good job of, like, championing that, you know, as you said, dirty work, right? For us, it's not like – those are, like, Buckeye plays. Like, for us, we call them Buckeye plays, like picking up tough ground balls and clearing the ball and all that stuff. Like, that stuff gets championed. And when it's getting championed and that's the culture that you're surrounded by, like, being a D-mid at Ohio State is the best. Like, people want to be – we call them sled dogs. Like, Coach Myers doesn't recruit D-middies. He recruits sled dogs to kind of play that position. And, you know, that it's just kind of the mindset we have when you're there.
Sounds a lot cooler than the position I played.
Yeah, right. It's all about advertising.
Sounds badass.
Yeah.
So did you actually get to start right away? Or were they, I mean, I know you've played, what, 52 games. How long before you broke the sort of the starting lineup?
Yeah, I mean, that year was incredible. Just the players that we had on that team, the 2017 team. But we had like four really good sled dogs in that year that were rotating in and out. And it was myself, Logan McConney, Bo Laurie, and Brennan Barger. And, you know, in the beginning, it was just kind of like we just threw two out there and we started rotating. And then, you know, towards the middle of the season, probably it got into lines where it was me and Logan kind of complimented one another the best. And then Bo and Barger complimented each other to the same degree. So that's where that kind of lines came in. But it really was a four-man unit, which is what you need if you're going to run, you know, the way we were running that year, you know, in transition and sparking that kind of offense. You need to be a, you know, stable of those guys for sure.
Talk about that year a little bit, because obviously, I mean, it goes back now a couple years, but that was a year you ended up playing in the national championship and, you know, really put Ohio State lacrosse on the map. It obviously continued to grow under Bresci and then Coach Myers, but that was, you know, I'm from Ohio, so I'm right outside Columbus.
Where
so,
are you from?
Hilliard, Ohio. So,
Yeah,
I grew up going to Buckeye games, and but you know, that really, that season put you guys on the map as an elite, you know, elite program. And unfortunately, you tore your ACL. And
when did that happen? At what part of the season?
First round of the playoffs, right?
That was the first round of the playoffs. Yep.
Did you know right away?
Walk us through that a little bit. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So the funny part is actually, I actually broke my thumb a couple games before that game. So I was playing with a cast on, and I remember I was running with, you know, Romar Dennis, I think, at that time. And I felt something weird happen to my knee. I came off. I talked to my trainer. She probably had a good sense of what had happened. She was trying to keep it positive, and she put me through all the drills, made sure I was okay to go back out. And then that's where I kind of partially tore it. And I went back out and then fully tore it. And, you know, that's when I knew kind of that it was, you know, that was over for me in terms of that.
Did it pop? Did you hear the pop? My son broke his, so I just relive it over and over and over.
Yeah, it's tough. The second time I heard that, and yeah. I immediately went down, and that was a different type of pain for sure than the first one.
Right. What was that like emotionally for you at that point, and then to see the guys sort of carry on? And I know you helped out coaching-wise and all of that, and you did everything you could, but what was that like just sort of mentally and emotionally?
It's tough. I mean, you put an 18, 19-year-old in that situation where – you know, you work your entire life to get to this moment, and then just like that, it's kind of just like taken away from you. But, you know, at the end of the day, our team was still, you know, chasing our ultimate goal. So like you have to kind of get over that very quickly and understand that, you know, you have to start bringing values in different ways. And I talked about a little bit to other people, but like my biggest job, you know, when this happened was like understanding the other team's offense as best I could, like players' hands, their tendencies, stuff like that. And then throughout the game, I would just be down on one knee, you know, over on the defensive side, just shouting like pretty much the entire game. Right. And, you know, that's kind of when my interest in coaching kind of started too, which was kind of cool. I got to see the game from a completely different angle and kind of an outsider perspective on it.
That's crazy. I mean, you know, to have that mindset, I know, like Eric said, his son tore his ACL, and in many ways, I always say it, I've said it to our team a lot, it's actually one of the best things that ever happened to him. He didn't miss any lacrosse. You know, he missed summer lacrosse, but he's able to rehab and get back for the spring, and he could only shoot with his left hand for 8 months.
Yeah.
And he came back and, you know, was able to kind of shoot the ball at an elite level with both hands. So I'm sure there's a silver lining for you, although I'm sure it was hard to see at that time.
Yeah, there's definitely a silver lining. You got to think positive, right? And then as soon as the season was over, you know, my mindset immediately shifted to, okay, now I got to do what has to be done to get back for the next season, the start of the game. And I remember, you know, promising, right? Probably shouldn't have been promising stuff, but promising to like the seniors and some of the seniors after a couple of days after that, like, hey, man, like, listen, I'm going to do what needs to be done. I'm going to make sure that, you know, I'm going to be on that field for you guys next year when that first game hits. So that's kind of, you know, the mindset shift from doing what needs to be done for the team. And then now it's okay, I need to do what I need to do so I can go help the team come the following year.
Can you touch on that a little bit? Because like that sort of that brotherhood that I know you guys have. I mean, my son, who's just finished his freshman year at Marist, I mean, he loves those guys. I mean, there's nothing like it. And I, you know, I'm on social media because I'm in the radio, and you know, I lament some of these things that are happening, Furman losing their program and how brutal that is. And people come at me and they're like, you know, if you're making your choice based on athletics, you know, if you can't go pro in it and make, you know, what's the point? You know, why are you doing that? And I just like, you don't understand the mindset these guys have. These are their best friends. You know, these are relationships they'll have for the rest of their lives. You know, the commitment, the teamwork, all of those things. Can you just kind of touch on that, what it means to be part of a team at an elite level like that?
Yeah, I mean, it's the best feeling. It's the best feeling in the world, you know, knowing you have those type of guys behind you at all times. And we call it, you know, we're striving to be an unbreakable brotherhood, like a group of uncommon men, as Coach Meyer says a lot. And, you know, what it just means is that, like, at the end of the day, you're going to have each other's back always. And it's just, you find a lot of peace in knowing that these guys are you know, they're focused on the same mission that you are, but you also have different goals and end goals in life and all that. And you're helping one another grow as individuals and lacrosse players and people. And it's just a really cool feeling. I mean, that accompanied with just being with one another all the time. I mean, I live with, you know, four or five guys on the team. I'm with them 2, 3, 4 hours a day. I study with them. I go eat dinner with them. Like, we're doing everything together. So, like, right. The relationships you build, it's, they're hard to deny. I mean, I would say that they are like brothers. You know?
Yeah, there's no doubt. And I know Dane could speak to that too from his experience at Robert Morris. And I tell people too, and it's been explained to me and I've seen it, you know, people want to hire athletes. They want to hire guys that have competed at a high level and proven that they can achieve, you know, that sort of thing. And specifically lacrosse players. It's kind of a unique thing. You know, you make a lot of great connections also in this game.
Yeah, really tight community. I feel like lacrosse, just more so than other sports, has like a really tight-knit community. I don't know if that's to do with all the summer stuff or mm-hmm. you're playing every summer with these guys who you eventually are playing in college and then eventually graduating and you just stay connected. But I do feel that lacrosse does have a very tight-knit community.
Yeah. Well, look how we found you, right? I mean, you know, I got to know Brett as a college coach for a couple years, and then, you know, it's all 6 degrees of separation. So, you know, one thing obviously that's apparent to me, and I don't know how apparent it is to you, Eric, but, you know, Ohio State has a certain way and language that you guys use with your with the way that you've instilled culture, you know, whether it's with the way you call the middies, with your mission statements, with your values. And I know, obviously, you know, I followed you guys pretty closely just being from Columbus and things like that. And culture in general at Ohio State is pretty elite when you look at what they focused on at the football program. And I think that's trickled down, maybe I'm wrong, to the other sports. So I'd love to hear you kind of talk about that, because that's something that we talk about at the high school level a lot. And I think young guys don't necessarily get what it means to be part of an elite culture. And you certainly are living that. And I would love to kind of hear you flesh that out a little bit.
Yeah, I'll do my best there. I think it starts with Coach Myers. I mean, no doubt about it. The culture we have is one of extreme accountability, extreme love for one another, and that kind of that willingness to do whatever it takes for one another, right? And we talk about, you know, we have all in, do your job, we not me, and we break those categories down, like actually break them down in dialogue with one another, with the coaching staff, like, man, how can you be better at all in? Like, are you giving relentless effort in everything you do? You know, with do your job, are you being culturable? Like, are you accepting peer-to-peer feedback? And then, like, we, not me is, like, is every action you make with the brotherhood in mind? And, like, we understand that no one's ever going to be perfect with those three pillars. Like, we're not striving to be perfect. We are striving to live as closely as we can to that kind of Buckeye way. And we feel like if we do that, that's going to lead us to the most success on and off the field. And, you know, we're very honest with one another. That's something that Coach Myers preaches. You know, as soon as you get there, like, we don't BS one another. We're very straightforward. But at the end of the day, we love one another. We're going to make sure that that's known as well. But, yeah, I would just say, you know, it's love and accountability. You know, Coach Myers says truth and love a lot. Like, he's going to give you the truth. But, you know, at the end of the day, he's going to put his arm around you and make sure that, you know that you're home with Ohio State lacrosse.
What's it like at Ohio State with, you know, such a legendary football team and, you know, being in the Big Ten and, you know, the basketball team, even super accomplished, certainly have had their moments at times. Where does the lacrosse team fit in? Do you guys have a good bond with the other guys? Do you guys all get along? What's that dynamic like on campus?
It's fun. Yeah, it's cool. I mean, it's a standard of excellence just at Ohio State, right? Like, every sports team, you know, Mr. Gene Smith, our athletic director, says it all the time, like, we're here to win you know, get really good job, get a good degree, and then win national championships. That's just like kind of how it is at Ohio State.
Simple.
And, you know, the vibe is very, very like homey. Like we all are in the same spot pretty much, working out, training in the same kind of weight room. We're all eating at the same fuel zones and stuff like that. And we're with one another. We all get our tutoring done at the same places. So like you just naturally grow with friendships with people all over different sports, whether it be, you know, men's ice hockey, women's ice hockey, you know, basketball, cross country, you name it. Like
right.
There's so many different people at, you know, these central spots that all the athletes are at that, you know, you just make a lot of new friends in that way.
At a school like Ohio State, do you share the weight room with the football guys? Do you have your own? How does that all work out?
Yeah, we're so fortunate enough. We actually just got a new weight room and a whole new facility called the Shoemaker facility. And it's top notch. I mean, don't quote me. It's probably like eight teams or so. And that's like lacrosse team, men's lacrosse, women's and men's soccer, softball, baseball, and maybe two others. But it's a high-end elite facility. We used to – and so every once in a while, Coach Myers will give us a treat and we'll go over to football and kind of experience that kind of environment, which is a lot of fun. But we have, you know, probably the best workout facility in the country at Ohio State.
And you're getting a new stadium, right? Am I right? Am I right?
Coach Myers is in the process of that. I think, yeah, for sure. That's sometime up the road, I think, but that's right. Something that he's been committed to ever since he stepped foot on campus as the head coach. You know, just getting a spot for just lacrosse is something that he really wants.
Right. Well, the team up north got one, so you guys,
you gotta get played one. It's a, you know, as much as we, you know, maybe dislike the team up north, it is a nice facility.
You can see how well trained I am growing up in Ohio.
Yeah, there you go.
I'm not done. We'll touch on a little bit, you know, it interests me because I, you know, obviously I went from playing to I coached a year of high school. I did some Division III, Division I, you know, able to get my master's, and now I'm a head high school coach. And I don't think I said I know I want to be a coach until I was probably – I worked 1 year at PNC Bank, and it was terrible. And I was like, you know what? This is not – I know what I don't want to do.
I didn't even know that.
I missed that experience. I missed the – relationships, that's the biggest thing. And so you're already saying before you're graduating, you know you want to coach, and I can tell you're well on your way. So just tell us a little bit about that passion, where that's been fueled, and you had a cool experience, right, with, you know, with Team USA as well.
Yeah, that was unreal experience. I think my passion from coaching comes from just understanding that I am a product of really good coaching and people investing their time in me. You know, people who aren't related to me and don't have really any relationship with my outcomes and what I do, but who just genuinely care about me and want to put that time in. You guys talk to a guy like Brett Manny. I mean, that guy is one of my biggest role models just because he was constantly trying to do whatever was best for me and to help me out in any way he could. And that had to do with just coaching and feedback, like I said earlier. But yeah, like I said, I'm a product of good coaching. Coach Myers is just a phenomenal leader. And, you know, you see a lot of Buckeye alums who want to get into coaching because they spend all their time with Coach Myers, who has such a big impact on them that they crave to like try to do that with other kids. So that's kind of where that comes from. And then the USA stuff was awesome. Coach Myers asked me probably about a year ago, honestly, if I wanted to just, you know, get involved and volunteer with the USA tryouts and all that. And, you know, I was so fortunate enough to be asked to go to Ireland. Obviously that got postponed a year, but I'm really thrilled about that. But it was a really cool experience.
You know, I want to get into a little bit. We haven't quite done this yet with guys, but, you know, as a short stick D middy, and you've played, you know, most of the best players in the country over the last couple of years, who's been the toughest guy for you to defend?
That's a good one. Oh, man.
He's going to say someone they practice against probably.
That would, yeah, right. I probably should. I mean, honestly, this year, the guys who I'm practicing getting dodged on are – some of the best Dodgers in the country. I mean, you look at some of the middies we have. You know, if we're looking for a good answer here, I would say my freshman year, I got matched up with Connor Canzaro from Denver, and it just wasn't an ideal matchup for me. So that's a really quick kid, two-handed, hard cover, you know, for a long pull. So that was definitely a mismatch.
Yeah, that little guy takes you behind. That's a that's a tough one.
Yeah.
What about, did you ever get matched up? You probably didn't, right? What's the kid from Notre Dame that just played it in the PLL, the
Sergio.
Right? No, I'm thinking. No, not. Did you ever match up with Sergio?
No, I did my freshman year. Yeah.
What was that like?
That's a big guy. I mean, you see how, what he looks like, and you know how good of a player he is in the PLL, and
right.
You know, he was the same kind of dude in Notre Dame, and we played him. You know, in my freshman year, I was also probably a buck 75 and a lot less stronger than I am now. So it was even more of a mismatch there.
This is coming from a 5'9", 165 guy in college, but those guys aren't as hard to guard as the smaller, like, you just have to hope you don't get run over.
Run over, yeah.
Yeah, you know what I mean? Try to take away his strong hands, where the shiftier guys, the guys that have split dodges like Romar Dennis, and they can go both ways.
That's the thing about the PLL is, like, when I was with the USA team, the U19 team, we were also with the men's team. And, I mean, all the guys who are playing at that next level are just – they're massive. They're all, like, 6'2", 6'3", just really built lacrosse players, which is – it's cool to see, you know. They're very athletic.
Right. Do you take – I mean, you look like a big, strong kid, obviously.
The fuel zone, man. I want to hear about the fuel zone.
Yeah, let's hear about that.
I got to get one of those at St. Andrews.
I want to hear about your workouts and how seriously you take that sort of thing. I mean, are you – like, when I was in college, I was eating salt and vinegar chips and Twinkies every day. I'm assuming you're not doing that. Like, how seriously do you take your nutrition, your diet, and that sort of thing? Your body, you know, you're 20, 21, whatever you are. At that age, it's easy to kind of take it for granted because your metabolism's going and you're going to grow and get strong either way. But I wonder, are you at this point, like, are you serious about what you're eating and your nutrition? Because I know I've read you want to play at that next level.
Yeah, no, absolutely, I am. I think that nutrition and stuff kind of gets more serious with age, right? So freshman year, I probably would have said, no, I don't really think about what I'm putting in my body. And then as you kind of get the wear and tear and the constant year after year of playing at a high level and stuff like that, you're trying to find any edge to make your body feel, you know, as close to 100% as you can get. And nutrition was a way for me, and being home with my parents, you know, my mom's a really good cook and she's helping me, you know, diet here and eat and put stuff in my body that's going to, you know, produce good outcomes, is something I'm taking really seriously, trying to lose some weight, lean out a little bit. Felt a little bit heavier this year, so that's kind of been a goal of mine to kind of lean out.
You got to get your son to listen to this podcast. He's probably munching on some Twinkies and playing Modern Warfare or something right now. So.
He's not big on nutrition yet. No.
Yeah, he'll come.
He's only a freshman, though. He's only a freshman.
Get him there.
That's true.
He'll figure it out. All right, so what are sort of the goals for next year? I mean, obviously, I got to imagine it's national championship or bust, right? I mean, sort of.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. We don't really have that mindset. Coach Myers, you know, we don't really talk about that kind of stuff. We really – and, you know, I'm really fortunate. Jeff, obviously, is another two-time captain with me. And our mindset right now is just, like, how can we be the best team in May? And we came up with some really cool stuff to kind of get our edge in and kind of get our leg up on the competition. And we're really just focusing month on month. This is a time where no one really knows how to handle it. No one's experienced this before. So, you know, we're using a lot of different people to bounce ideas off of and just figure out what's best for our team. So, you know, our May phase is going to end in the coming week or so, and it's on to June, and we got to figure out, you know, another cool and exciting way to kind of keep the team engaged, you know, keep the level of accountability of training up, and also, you know, get, you know, 10 or 11 new freshmen, you know, acclimated to what Buckeye lacrosse looks like. So that's the fun part of being a captain and stuff is, you know, figuring out, you know, fun and effective ways to do kind of all that stuff.
So are you organizing like Zoom meetings and that kind of thing with the guys? Like what's that like?
Yeah, 100%. Me and Jeff and I are. Yeah. So, I mean, we just had a Zoom meeting with our leadership council the other night. It was really, really positive. And it's just, you know, Jeff and I, our leadership council is 14 guys, all elected by our team, who just are in charge, and it's like two or three guys per grade. So there's a lot of disparity, obviously, with grades and stuff. And just in charge of leading the team, you're getting a better sense of, you know, what's going on throughout the grades and stuff like that. So me and Jeff kind of had a nice conversation with them last night. It was about an hour. And we just kind of dial ourselves in a little bit. What did we like about the first two weeks of May? What, you know, are we struggling with right now? How do we fix that? And then, you know, what does the next 2 weeks look like? And it's really great dialogue. I mean, those guys are buttoned up as well, and they love serving Ohio State lacrosse. So it's a really fun thing for us to do.
Sounds like you guys got it figured out, and certainly you got two big fans in Eric and I now, I tell you that much. I don't know if they'll play Ohio State on the schedule, and Bobby Moe used to play Ohio State. I don't know if they do that anymore. Those are the only
scrimmaged them. They were a tough team. I mean, they have some really good players.
Yeah, a lot of Canadians. I know you guys often compete with the same type of kids. So,
well, listen, Ryan, it's been a real pleasure. Appreciate you taking the time out to talk to Dana and I. We love it. Big fans. We'll be watching you next season. Hopefully, you guys get fall ball in. Everything gets on schedule. Yeah. And we're just sort of off and running with this. You've been fantastic. Thanks for checking it out. Ryan, we appreciate your time. Dane, of course, if we want to follow Dane on Twitter, it's Coach Dane Smith. I'm EB Junkies. Ryan, you want to plug anything? You got any social media or anything you care about?
No.
I'm all good. I just appreciate you guys giving me this some time to talk lacrosse with you too.
No,
yeah, and certainly if you ever want to be an assistant coach, I'll pay you $3,000. You can you can hop on staff and I'll let you run the box. You're on a path to a great career, so we wish you the best, man. Appreciate it.
Thank you
so much, buddy. All right, that's Ryan Tarafinko, that's Dane Smith, I'm Eric Bickle. Spread the word for us, everybody. We can't wait to do this again next week. Thank you. Peace.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.